We are now dealing with the seventh Kariga. We have already explained a large portion. So, the sage describes the absolute reality, Brahman, as that which is not conscious of the internal world, not conscious of the external world, nor conscious of both the worlds, nor dense with consciousness, nor simple consciousness, nor unconsciousness, and which is unseen, actionless, means which is beyond action, incomprehensible, uninferable, unthinkable, indescribable, whose proof consists in the identity of the self. That is the one reality which is the witness in all the three states of waking, dream, and dreamless sleep, in which all phenomena come to a cessation and which is unchanging, auspicious, and non-dual. This is Atma. And towards the end of this mantra, the Upanishad tells you, Sa Atma Sa Vijñeyaḥ. And before that, Adrishtam Avyavahāryam Agrahyam Alakshanam Achindyam Avyapadeshyam Ekatma Pratyasaram, etc. The reason why we are dealing with this verse very extensively is this is the most important mantra of this Upanishad, and it gives you in a nutshell the whole range of Mandukya philosophy. Now, towards the end, the Upanishad tells you, prapanchopashamam shantam, etc. Cessation of the world. Before going further, there is a small discussion between different schools of thoughts and Vedantin, because that gives you an insight into the real thrust of this philosophy. Here, a rival school asks a question. See, why do you have to give an independent description of the fourth stage? The Upanishad has already explained the first three states, that is, waking, dream, and dreamless sleep, or Sushupti state. That means Jagrat, Swapna, and Sushupti. And also, in that order, Vishwa, Tejasa, and Prajna, the witness which experiences all this in the three states. So what is left after describing all the three states is the fourth one. So where is the need to give a separate and independent description of the fourth? What is left out after describing the three states is the fourth stage. So here, the rival school projects this objection. Here, the Advaita, the essence of Advaita, the one interesting aspect of Advaita philosophy, which is the key to understanding the real thrust of Advaita, is projected. In the works of Shankaracharya, you know, as I shall explain in brief and then go back to the subject. Shankaracharya wants to establish Advaita philosophy through these bhashyas. He could have very easily given a very exhaustive, elaborate description of his thesis, as done in other schools, Critique of Pure Reason, many of the fundamental books of Western thought, the works of Hegel, Leibniz, Spinoza. You find even the British empiricist of phenomenologists like Kant, Hume, Locke, even utilitarians like J.S. Mill or Jeremy Bentham. You find their philosophy is explained, that's all. So where is the need to counter the rival schools of thought? Any student of Vedanta who tries to read the original works of Shankaracharya, or even those who try to read the translations. In fact, they have, after coming here, many put this question: why should Shankara bother about the views of rival schools? There are many reasons. One important reason is the bhashyas or commentaries were written in 8th century. And that was a crucial age in the history of Indian philosophy and culture. Perhaps one of the most sensitive periods in the history of the culture and philosophical evolution of Vedanta. Any number of innumerable systems of philosophy had arisen, and they all try to refute the basic principles of theism. They try to establish that there is no God, there is no need for morality like the Charvakas, Indian materialists. And then they try to emphasize the duality of existence, like Sankhyas and Mimamsakas, who stress the ritualistic aspects. And the Buddhist systems of thought, which I referred to maybe in last lecture, the two idealist schools of Buddhism, namely subjective idealism, that is Vijnanavada of Asanga, Dignaga and others, and Shunyavada, that is the theory of voidness, that's how it is known nowadays in America, theory of emptiness, doctrine of emptiness, that is Shunyavada. And also the two schools of realism, Sotrantika and Vaibhashika, they all try to establish that there is no Atman, Anatmavada. It's called Anattavada in Pali or Prakrit. It is Anatmavada. There is no Atman. There is no self. So this was the philosophical climate of 8th century AD. And about 150 years before Shankaracharya, Gaudapada wrote this Karika. It's a commentary on Mandukya Upanishad. But that doesn't seriously establish a superstructure of Advaita philosophy. Gaudapada just expounds some of the fundamental conclusions, not elaborate principles, but conclusions of Advaita. Ajadavada, which Gaudapada deals with in Mandukya Karika, which we may deal with later. That means there is no creation at all. The doctrine of non-creation, that is Gaudapada's theory, which he expounds in the Karika, that gives you the conclusion of Advaita philosophy. How Advaita looks like if you look at it from the top of the terrace. But how an ordinary seeker, student of philosophy, can enter this field step by step? That aspect was not taken seriously by Gaudapada. So, 150 years after Gaudapada wrote this Karika, Shankara was born. So, during his time, he had to travel all over India 4 times. And that was an age, almost you can, you can say that whole country was full of different schools of thoughts. You will get an idea of what a volatile age it was. If I tell you, there are no less than 34 schools mentioned in Gaudapada Karika, and there are no less than 9 schools of creation mentioned in Gaudapada's Karika. 34 schools of thought means 34 concepts of absolute reality are mentioned. And again, 9 distinct schools of creation, that means 9 schools of creationism are mentioned. We will deal with that when in the beginning of Karika. So, Shankaracharya tried to establish the fact that Atman is one, the reality is one, and that reality is immanent, it is transcendent, it is omnipresent, and it is beyond sensory perception, beyond description, beyond contemplation with mind or intellect, but which is intimately and intensely felt to be the real essence of all our being. For that, he had to argue with different schools of thoughts. So most of the arguments which they projected forward during the debates are projected in the Bhashya, and also some of the possible objections which rival schools are likely to ask are also projected, and how Advaita responded to those objections is also clearly shown. This is the background. Now, just to bring out one fundamental principle of Advaita, here an objection is put in the mouth of a rival school. I won't read the Bhashya as such, but just to give an idea, here and there I may read, not every day, but sometimes. ननु आत्मनः चतुष्पादत्वं प्रतिज्ञाय पादत्रय कथनेनैव चतुर्थस्य अन्तःप्रज्ञत्यादिभ्यो अन्यत्वे सिद्धि न अन्तःप्रज्ञमित्यादि प्रतिषेधो नानर्थः. मीन्स् द ऑब्जेक्शन इज सिंपल. सी, यू आर ट्राइंग टू एक्सप्लेन दैट दिस आत्मन इज वन, दिस आत्मन इज आत्मन इज एंडोर्ड विथ फोर क्वार्टर्स. नाउ यू ऑलरेडी एक्सप्लेन्ड थ्री क्वार्टर्स. Fourth one actually becomes well established. You can say that what is left out is the fourth. So where is the need to tell that this reality is not, it is not conscious of the internal self, nantapragnam, not conscious of the external. It is neither the witness of the external phenomena or dream waking state, or the inner phenomena, the subtle phenomena in dream state, and it is avyapadesyam, adushtam, and so, or you are explaining all these using so many negative terms. What is the use of all these? If you say Atman is endowed with four quarters, three we have already explained, fourth one is what is left to be explained. That's enough. Then why do you say this fourth one cannot be explained? It is nantapragnam, nabhishpragnam, nubhaidapragnam, avyapadesyam, adrishtam, and so on. And you say it can only be explained by explaining what it is not, because it is beyond words. So where is the need of all this? This is a rival school. Now the answer is simple. Bhashyankaracharya already established earlier that when you make the statement that Atman consists of four quarters, it is not like the four feet of a cow. 4 feet are the 1, 2, 3, 4, first, second, third, and fourth. It's not like that. It is rather like the four quarters of Karshapanam is the word mentioned in the Bhashya. Well, if for imagination say you think that $1 can have four quarters, perhaps it doesn't have, but you have to think of that to understand the philosophy. Or let us say in India, 1 rupee is called a coin, $1, whatever you call. There are four quarters, mean 25%, 1/4, 50%, half of it, 75%, 3/4 of it. Each has got coins. In fact, they had those coins till recent times, because now it's over. Now, 1/4 is not different from 1.5, because 1/4 is already involved in half. And 1/4 and half are both involved, both are already included in 3/4. And 1/4, half, and 3/4, they're all included in one. So, similarly, Atman is Turiya or Atman is explained as having four quarters. Just as a dollar having four quarters or a rupee having four quarters. 1/4 is already included in half, and both are included in 3/4, and all the three are included in one. Similarly, this Atman is present in waking state, in dream state, and also deep sleep state. And again, dream and waking state are both included in deep sleep state, because in deep sleep state there is complete non-comprehension, and non-comprehension is the cause of misapprehension or false apprehension. Because you don't see that it is a rope, so you mistake it is a snake. So the mistake or misapprehension that it is a snake is caused by non-recognition, when you are not able to recognize that it is a rope. So sushupti or deep sleep is the state of complete concealment, and that leads to false cognition. So all the three quarters are included in the fourth. So therefore, just by explaining the three quarters, you can't say that fourth is already explained as what is left out. No, it cannot be done like that. Second point is, in spiritual introspection, we are just ruling out, we are just denying, we are just negating all the wrong cognitions, all the superimpositions that we have superimposed upon ourselves. A normal man, you just imagine a normal man thinks that he is a son, a wife, or man doesn't, of course, a human being, let us, an individual, mother, father, happy, unhappy, and so on. This is what really happens to any normal person. Now, these are all false cognitions. The moment he realizes that he is the Atman, which can never be happy in the relative sense, and therefore he can never be unhappy in the relative sense. You have to remember one point: happiness and unhappiness, these two terms are used here. Samsai, sukhi, dukhi, these words you find in this in the text. I am now unhappy, I am now happy. Here, happiness and unhappiness always indicate mental states which are relative, which are transitory. When you say you are happy, it only means that you are not unhappy. Because the state of happiness in the relative sense, in the empirical sense, is subject to change. Before happiness, you are unhappy because you did not have happiness. And after happiness, you will be unhappy because you lose your happiness. So everything is relative. It's just like two sides of the same coin. You can't have a coin with only one side. You can't have happiness, perfect happiness, in this relative empirical world. Then there we can have a real happiness, and that happiness goes beyond happiness and unhappiness. That is what Gita calls sukham atyandikam yattat buddhigrahim atindriyam. The real sukha means real blissfulness, which is not an empirical experience, which is not related to experiences in this world. It is an experience which goes beyond both happiness and also unhappiness. So that happiness, that blissfulness rather, that is the real goal that can be achieved only when you realize that you are the Atman. So when we remove all the superimpositions through the process of negation, then what is left out, which you cannot negate, is our real state. That is the only way for us to explain the absolute reality. This is the answer given by the Advaitin. Now, in Shankara's books, Shankara's commentary, he gives one of the most unforgettable description of how one actually attains this level of blissful experience. So there he gives the example. He gives the example of an ordinary person who lives in this world. He uses the word samsari. Samsara means this world. Samsara means actually not the world as such, a state of being born in this world, suffering and enjoying, doing work, being tossed about by the mighty currents of fate and destiny, as a helpless boat being tossed about the mighty waves of an ocean, and ultimately everything coming to an end, and again starting the same game the next life. This is what is meant by the word samsara in Sanskrit language. Samsarati iti samsara means you go on going about being tossed about by the waves of destiny. You're forced to do different things. In most cases, man is not free. Though he is free, that freedom only in a political or sociological sense. But generally, he is a slave of senses. Freedom from senses is the freedom in the spiritual sense. Freedom for senses leads to spiritual slavery. Freedom from senses leads to spiritual illumination. So Shankaracharya, in one of his well-known commentaries, based on one particular karika, Gaudapada karika, explains this point. He explains this in the context of a verse written by Gaudapada, explaining how a soul who has been tossed about in this ocean of worldly existence, suddenly one day opens his eyes, and by the grace of a great teacher, suddenly he realizes that he is not just a socio-physical mechanism. He is beyond the limitations. He is a real blissful self. When he realizes his true nature, he goes beyond the misery of worldly existence. Anadi mayaya supto yada jiva prabuddhide ajam anidram asvapnam advaitam buddhide tada. This is the karika. I shall read the translation. When the individual self, under the influence of maya, now that is beginningless, is suddenly awakened, then he realizes that is the Turiya, the Atman, the unborn, sleepless, dreamless, non-dual reality. So, the life in this world of an ordinary person who is subject to this endless misery is compared to the state of sleep. In sleep, we lose our ability to see external things. So when you are sleeping, it's a kind of spiritual sleep. When spiritually we are asleep, we are sleeping, we lose touch with the reality. We may dream, but dream also is a kind of misapprehension or false cognition, as I have already explained. Now, Shankara here describes who is a jiva. Jiva means an individual soul. And how he suddenly realizes that he is the Turiya. Yoyam samsari jivaha sobhelekshanena tattu apradibodhirupena bijatmana anyathagrihanena lekshanena cha anadikala pravrtena maya lekshanena sopnena mamayam pida putroyam napta kshetram pashavu ahamesham swami sukhi dukhi kshaidoham anena vardhidascha anena ittevam pragaran sopvan sthanatyevi pasyin suptah. This is, I am not planning to teach this portion of the bhashya. That's not the plan. Just to read and then I shall explain elaborately. So, when you are spiritually asleep, when you are in a state of utter spiritual darkness, when you are in the power of Maya, you think, well, this is my father, this is my son, this is my grandson, this is my plot, these are my cattle, I am their master, I am no happy, I am no unhappy, I have lost so much of this, I have gained so much of this, all this. Which brings me sorry. When you are spiritually asleep, when we are in the power of Maya. Now, what is Maya? Maya needs a lot of explanation. But I shall try to explain to you first on the basis of Swami Vivekananda's definition. Swamiji, in one context, gives almost a verbatim translation of Shankaracharya's definition of Maya in Viveka Chudamani. Sannapyasannapi bhyatmigano, bhinnapya bhinnapi bhyatmigano, etc. The Swamiji says, this Maya is neither existence nor non-existence, neither part nor whole. And ultimately Swamiji says, it is indescribable, it is beyond definition, beyond words. And Swamiji, again, gives an idea of Maya at work in our minds. He gives the picture of a helpless mother. So a mother brings up the child with all affection and love. But a child turns out to be a renegade, ungrateful. And there are many things in this world that we are not, though we know very well it is something painful, it brings pain to us, we cannot shake ourselves off it, of its clutches. We know that it is painful, we know it is bad, we know it brings only grief. It is not intellectual ignorance, then it is not Maya. We know very well there are certain things in the world which are bad, which brings misery, which can never make us happy, which are inseparably related to misery and unhappiness and grief. Still, we cannot shake ourselves off its clutches. Now, who is responsible for this? And, well, we can never really explain it. When we come out of the clutches of Maya, we understand that Maya is something which really doesn't exist. Another word for Maya in Vedanta is avidya. In fact, the word avidya itself means ya vidyate sa avidya, that which really doesn't exist. But you understand that it doesn't exist only when you come out of its clutches. When you are within the power of Maya, we are not able to realize that it is something which actually doesn't exist. So, that's why, you know, the word Maya is sometimes explained in Vedanta in a very technical sense by orthodox scholars. There are two words, Ma and Ya. Ma actually in Sanskrit indicates negation. Ma Vada magachadu, you don't go there, you don't speak, and so on. So Ma indicates when it used with lot, one particular lakara, one particular, it means don't do that. You are denying permission to a man, you don't go there. Magachadu, don't go there, like that. Then Sa is actually a pronoun. So Sa Baliga, that girl, Sastri, that lady, Sa Nadi, that river, and so on. So this is a feminine gender pronoun. Now you don't use a pronoun to indicate something which doesn't exist at all. So it is something which exists or which gives the wrong notion, gives the illusion that it exists. But really it does not exist. And this is indicated by the word Ma. which has got the meaning of negation. So Maya is something which really doesn't exist, really, but which exists in our day-to-day interactions, so long as we don't realize that we are the Atman. That's why Swamiji, and now how it works in modern life, Swamiji says, utter helplessness which man feels, which an individual feels in this world. Though he knows it, he cannot come out of it. If he is absolutely ignorant of its existence and he is under its power, then it becomes definable, describable. But he knows that it brings misery, it is a perpetual source of trouble, still he cannot shake off, he cannot come out of its clutches. This is Maya. This is what really happens to a common man. So Shankaracharya says, such a man is spiritually asleep. So Gaudapada in the Kariga says, Anadi Maya Suptaha. This Maya is Anadi. Anadi actually means beginningless. Now anything which is beginningless ought to be endless. This is the logic. But Vedanta doesn't agree with that. Vedanta says Maya is something which is beginningless. But it is not endless. The moment you realize that you are the real Atman, the blissful Atman, Maya ceases to exist. Then suddenly you realize Maya is something which actually did not exist. But you understand, you realize that it does not exist only when you come out of its clutches. So it is anadi. So Vedantins call it Maya is anadi, but not ananta, it is santa. Why? Because the moment you realize the supreme truth, Maya comes to an end. So it has got an end. It ceases to exist when you realize the supreme truth, but it is beginningless. What is the meaning of beginninglessness here? The idea is this. Again, you have to take up the analogy of Dejju, I mean the serp, the rope and the snake. Sometimes I have to repeat because there are new students in every session. We don't understand. You think of a room which is not well neat, which is in semi-darkness. There is an object lying in the room. Actually, it is a piece of rope. Suppose there are 400 people watching these objects. Because it is not clearly visible, but there is just enough light to tell you that there is something which is lying on the floor. 4 people have got 4 different views with regard to what the object is. One man thinks, A thinks it is a snake. It resembles the position, shape of a snake. B thinks it is a stick, a curved type of stick. C thinks that it is a crack on the floor. And D, the fourth one, thinks that it is a thin stream of light. Now, when the light is brought, all the 4 persons come to realize that it is a piece of rope. Now, if you ask the question, where did the snake go? The answer is snake did not go anywhere because snake, to begin with, did not exist there. So when did the rope become the snake? First of all, it did not become the snake. So we can, in this, that it did not become the snake at all. So it is beginningless. Beginningless means it never became the snake at all. Snake did not go anywhere because there was no snake at all. So this Maya, first of all, never existed. Therefore, it is beginningless. So anadi. But it can turn you asleep because it can work through our mind so long as we are ignorant of our true nature, that we are the Atman, we are the Turiya, we are the Brahman, which is the eternal supreme reality, which is the blissfulness itself, so long as we are in a state of unawareness of this fact, we are asleep. And Maya puts you into sleep. Then what happens? And this individual is now sleeping under the power of Maya. Suddenly, he wakes up. When he wakes up, Shankaracharya gives a long description in one of his most celebrated passages in the entire range of Shankara's commentaries. They are extensive. Then he realizes that he is that supreme reality. So what happens? He thinks, Maya lakshanena suptena mama ayam pita putroyam napta. Means he's my father, mother, son, children, and so on. And I'm happy, unhappy, I have plenty of money, I have plenty of bank account. Now there is a depression, money is lost. And now I have gained some more money. I have all these ideas, all given here. Bhashyakara says, kshayitaham anena, then vardidascha. That is, all these things are mentioned. Now I have gained something, now I have lost something. Happiness and unhappiness. This is the state of a man who is spiritually in deep slumber. Then what happens? The Bhashyakara says, then suddenly a great teacher comes to him and he tells him, this is a symbolic presentation. Or he may read from books, he may go and listen to these talks, and then he may suddenly realize, well, I was sleeping all these days, now only wake up my eyes. Those who want to reach a state of permanent awareness, Vedanta is the only way out. So Shankaracharya says, yada Vedanta artha tattva abhijnena, somebody who knows the real meaning of Vedanta, parama karunikena guruna nastevam tum hidu phalatmakaha kintu tattumasiti pradibodhimanaka tadevam pradibuddhide katham nasmin sabahyabhyantaram va janmadi bhava vikaraha asti ataha ajam sabahyabhyantara sarva bhava vikaravarjidam ityarthaha yasmat janmadi karanabhutam tasminna vidya tamo bijam nidra vidyate iti anidram. Bhashyakara explains, I shall explain in English. The idea is this. Suddenly, a teacher comes. A teacher comes and tells you that you are not this body, the psycho body, psychophysical mechanism. You are something beyond all this. You live in this world, but think that this world is impermanent. You live in this world, but you don't be a slave of this world. That is the effect of the teachings of this great teacher. But what the teacher tells him is explained here. The teacher tells him, you are not this body, you are not just this mind, you are not this psychophysical mechanism. All these changes, some dukkha, sukha, dukkha, pain, grief, sorrow, and happiness. One should remember, when I use the word happiness, in such context, happiness means relative happiness, empirical happiness, a happiness which is changeable. It is not bliss. Real bliss is also happiness, but it goes beyond the normal happiness and unhappiness in the empirical sense. Normal, it transcends the experiences related to empirical life. That's the idea behind it. So when the teacher tells him, you are that reality, the Atman, which is beyond all this body, mind, physical mechanism, all these things are happening to you, they are all related to your body only, and body is not the whole of your personality. This world also, this world and your body, they belong to the same category in terms of reality. They belong to the same level of reality. World is changing, your body also will change. So also your mental states also will change. happiness, unhappiness, and so on. So also all the relations around you, they are not eternal. Vedanta doesn't ask you to run away from this world, thinking that this world is lifeless drudgery. Vedanta doesn't say that. Vedanta only tells you, live in this world, but keep this truth within you, so that you don't suffer misery, you don't become a slave, a victim of anxiety, neurosis, depression, and all these things. Live in this world, but try to live in this world as a master. You can live in the world as a master when you realize that you are something beyond this world. You are the Atman. So, Shankaracharya says, all these changes, external changes and internal changes, all these modifications, external and internal, they do not exist in you. They are all related to body only. And you are not this body. Body is not eternal. A man may live maybe 100 years, 120 years at the most. So body is also subject to destruction, changes. So you are something beyond all this. If one realizes this, one need not neglect the body. One need not wish away the empirical world in which we live, of which we are a part. But we can live in this world in a more intelligent way. We can live in Swami Vivekananda's words as a master, not as slaves. That's the idea behind. So this is the description of Shankaracharya. Now we'll come to the mantra again, the Upanishad mantra. Now, as I said earlier, Gaudapada has written a number of verses, nearly 215 verses, which is called Gaudapada Karika, which is a commentary in metrical form or on Mandukya Upanishad. And Shankaracharya has written a commentary on Gaudapada's Karika, expounding the entire edifice of Advaita philosophy. So again, we have to go back to the seventh mantra. So we have already explained here, Adrishtam, Avyavakaryam, Agrahyam, Alakshanam, Achindyam, Avyapadesyam, Ekarna Pratyasaram, Prapanchopashamam. Again, a very important mantra comes here, Prapanchopashamam. Where the world ceases to exist. What exactly does it mean? In two ways we have to take. From the standpoint of a liberated soul, a spiritually enlightened person, cessation of world means this. You live in this world, but you don't look at the world as a permanent reality. For most people living in this world, world alone is real, everything else is unreal. So instead of Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya, which is a dictum of Vedantins, normally we think Brahma Mithya and Jagat Satyam. Because those who look upon the world as the supreme reality, everything else, anything transcendental, would be unreal. So, an enlightened man, a spiritually elevated person, lives in this world, does all his duties and responsibilities, but so far as he is concerned, this world, this empirical world, is no more the eternal, permanent reality. It is only a relative entity which comes and goes, subject to change, subject to destruction. It is going on changing. So nothing in this world can be permanent. The idea that these things are impermanent will help us to develop a higher idea of detachment to the world. Normally, attachment is caused by identification. This is mine, this I want. Though intellectually we know that everything in this world is subject to change, still when we pursue, when we strive for physical enjoyments, we think, we act as if those things are permanent. And because we think these things are permanent, we want to achieve them, we want to acquire them. And This leads to misery and happiness, grief, sorrow, and so on. Therefore, live in this world, but remember, this world is not eternal. It is a changing relative entity. This is the standpoint of a liberated, enlightened person. From a purely metaphysical point of view, there is an interpretation. That's what I'm going to read now. ప్రపంచో ఎది విద్యేద నివర్తేదన్న సంశయ మాయామాత్రమిదం ద్వైతం అద్వైతం పరమార్థత. ద ఐడియా ఈజ్ దిస్, యు నో, హియర్ ప్రపంచోపశమం. వెన్ యు రియలైజ్ ది సుప్రీం ట్రూత్ తురీయ, ద వర్ల్డ్ సీసెస్ టు ఎగ్జిస్ట్ ఈజ్ మెన్షన్డ్. వాట్ డూ మీన్ బై దిస్? డస్ ద వర్ల్డ్ సీస్ టు ఎగ్జిస్ట్? సపోజ్ ద వర్ల్డ్ డస్ నాట్ సీస్ టు ఎగ్జిస్ట్, then can you never attain the supreme reality? Prapancha nivrutya chet pratibuddhyate anivrutte prapanche katham advaitam iti uchyate. Suppose the world doesn't cease to exist, the world continues to exist, in that case you cannot have advaitic realization. Very natural question. So again, a very fundamental clue to the metaphysics of advaita is explained in this karika, which explains the concept of prapanchopashama, means cessation of the world, as explained in the Upanishad. The idea is this: if this empirical world were real, then of course it should vanish. But this empirical world, this duality, is only an illusion. In fact, it is not real. The idea is this: can you see the rope only when the snake runs away? The question arises. Somebody, again, you have to, you know, these ideas are explained in a very simple language with the help of an analogy, the rope snake analogy, again, which actually almost 1600 years old analogy, which is repeated in hundreds of Vedantic books and also both in Buddhist philosophical works, Nagarjuna and others. So the question arises, it makes everything very simple. Suppose you tell, well, you realize this, you realize the truth that it is only a piece of rope, only when the snake runs away. Suppose the snake doesn't go away, then you don't realize that this is the rope. The fact is, if the snake actually existed, it has to go away. Then only you will understand it is a piece of rope. But because the snake never existed, it doesn't have to run away. What you mistook to be the snake is now understood and recognized as rope. The same applies in Vedanta. When we look at the world, the oceans, the mountains, the rivers, all this, any student of geology would tell you, any student who knows the basics of modern science will tell you, the world that we live in was not like this throughout. It is subject to change, and what is subject to change cannot be eternal. Now, look at this world, and then you understand the world in its true nature is one reality. You just remove from your mind the idea of names and forms, the manifoldness, the idea of plurality. Then if you look at the world is non-different from Brahman. That is the idea behind. So Vedantin say, nam rupa drishtya mithya, surupa drishtya satyam. The world in its true essence is Brahman itself. Sarvam khalu idam Brahma. That is Vedanta Upanishad statement. Sarvam khalu means all these that you see around is in fact Brahman only. But not when associated with name and form. That's why Swamiji in modern English stated, when you look at the reality, the Brahman, the Atman, the supreme reality, through the prism of time, space, and causation. In Vedantic language, through name and form, then that supreme reality is seen to be the world. It is seen and understood to be the manifold phenomenal world. When you look at this world without the aid of time, space, and causation, the world itself is seen to be Brahman. That is the clue to Vedantic philosophy. So that's why Gaudapada says, you don't have to remove this world. You don't have to run away from this world. You just change the way you look at this world. The moment you change the way you look at this world, then the world is understood to be what in reality it is. That is Brahman. That's why Swamiji said, when look at it through the glasses of time, space, and causation, name and form, Brahman is seen to be this manifold world. When you look at this manifold world without the aid of time, space, and causation, we can have an outlook beyond time, space, and causation, then this world itself is seen to be Brahman. So when he says, Sarvam Khalu Idam Brahma, that is the idea behind. So that's why, so the Bhashyakara says, yes, if the world really existed, the world should cease to exist. Then only we can see Brahman. But in that case, there's a problem. There'll be two entities, something which exists and vanishes. But it is not so. The snake doesn't vanish because the snake did not exist. So the fact that this is not snake, this negation is done on the entity which you first mistook to be the snake. So that is the idea behind this thought. So the world itself is taken to be Brahman, the reality. That is why, according to Vedanta, from philosophical point of view, you look at this world as something relative and Brahman as something absolute. Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya. Mithya means relative. That which is within the realm of time, space, and causation, Nama and Rupa, that is Mithya. But in reality, Brahman is only reality. This is from the philosophical point of view. From experience point of view, Upanishad tells that Sarvam Khalu Idam Brahma, everything that you see around is Brahman, the Atman only. So from the experience point of view, Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam. Brahman is real, Jagat also is real. So what we mistook to be the snake is in fact rope only. That is Surupa Drishtya, Brahma only. Nama Rupa Drishtya, Mithya. This is the idea behind. Well, in the teachings of one of the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, you find his name is Swami Turiyanandaji. Many of you must have read Turiyanandaji's life and teachings. Towards the end of his life, he verbally gave expression to this truth from the experience point of view. Brahma Satyam, Jagat Satyam. So there is nothing to be negated. What is negated, in fact, it was only superimposition. This is the idea behind. Now we'll come back to the last portion of this 7th mantra. Again, we have to go back to 7th mantra. These are all the descriptions of the last portion of the 7th mantra. That is, we all describe prapanchopashamam, shantam, shivam, advaitam, chaturtham, manyante, etc. Chaturtham, that also we have explained. Sa Atma, sa Vijnyeha. This Atman, this essence, the indweller, the inner reality, present in everything in this world. It is to be known. Already we have seen in the mantra itself, we find here, terms like adrishtam, avyavakaryam, agrahyam, alakshanam, achindyam, avyapadesyam, ekarma pratesaram, etc. This atman, this turiya, is unseen, incomprehensible, uninferable, unthinkable, indescribable, etc. Now, the mantra says sa vijñeyaha. Why is it called vijñeyaha? There are two descriptions given to this aspect, which also give a clue to the fundamental thesis of Advaita. One point is, it is just a contextual expression, because in the earlier portions of the Upanishad, when we were dealing with Vishwa, Taijasa and Prajna, the witness in waking, dream and deep sleep states, we already give a description of this experience, of the witness as presumably, that is the Vishwa, Taijasa and Prajna. So in that context, the Upanishad just makes a statement that this Atman, this Turiya, is also to be understood, to be known. But in reality, that's why it's called Savignyeha iti Bhudapurvagitya iti, etc. Now the idea, another important explanation is, in fact, this Atman cannot be known the way we know external things, empirical things. But when we negate all the superimpositions, then something is left which we cannot negate. After all, we cannot negate ourselves. A person may negate everything, but he cannot negate himself. The negator cannot negate himself. And what is left, which is beyond description, which cannot be seen or expressed, but which can be only experienced as I, present, I, the one, the subject, the witness, present in waking state, dream state, and deep sleep state. This reality should be known as the witness, present in all the three states, but also which transcends all the three states. So this turiya, this Atman is present in dream, waking, and also deep sleep states. But at the same time, it is not exhausted, it is not limited by that. As I said last time, if you can think of a house with three rooms, one built above the other, and if you're walking, if you're going up and down, you can say you are present in all the rooms. You are capable of being present in all the three rooms. But you are not limited or confined to any one of those rooms, because you go beyond both. You are present in all the three rooms. Atmana Turiya is present in all the three states of Jagrat, Swapna and Sushupti, waking, dream and deep sleep states. But at the same time, it transcends all the three states, because it is the one which cannot deny itself, which is present, ekarna pratyasaram. I am the one Atman, the witness, the reality, which was present in all the three states. And nobody can deny himself. So Vedantins say that if you try to prove this reality, this Atman, with the help of all the six tools of Vedantic epistemology, that is perception, inference, comparison, presumption, verbal testimony, and non-cognition, that is Pratyaksha, Anumana, Upamana, Shabda, Arthavati, Anupalabdhi, the six tools of Vedantic epistemology. You try all this, but you cannot explain and describe this reality. And when all these tools of cognition fail, there is something still remains which cannot be fully explained with the help of any of these six tools of perception, epistemology, theory of knowledge. Then there is something that is called sarva pramana avathi means that what is the limit of all tools of knowledge. Words cannot explain, scriptures cannot explain. Perception, it cannot be perceived, it cannot be inferred, it cannot be understood through comparison. And it cannot be understood through arthapatti, presumption. You cannot say it doesn't exist. I can't say I cannot, I don't exist. Anupalabdhi also cannot explain its presence. But all these pramanas ultimately tell you that the reality is beyond me, beyond them. When you reach a point where all the tools of knowledge fail to fully to understand the reality, but the presence of that reality is deeply felt, even the one who is trying to explain the reality with these tools is the reality itself. So ultimately, when we reach a point, you make your inquiry in the external world or everywhere, internal world, in our own mind, ultimately the inquiry ceases to exist, but still the reality is felt within, and that is the Atman. In the ancient Rigvedic Samhita, there is a famous sukta which many of you sangachadhum, samvadadhum, etc. There also it comes here. And still more forcefully it is expressed in a still more famous hymn. It is called Nasadiya Sukta. Sometimes called Srishti Sukta or the hymn of creation. Nasadasi, no sudasi, dadadi. See, Sato Bendhum Asadi Niravindan Hridi Pradeshya Kavayo Manisha. That explains everything in nutshell. In this sukta, the Vedic sage says, a saint or sage try to understand, to realize the fundamental cause of creation. He made inquiry everywhere. Then ultimately, he realized that reality to be himself when he turned the inquiry inward. So, the one who makes the inquiry realizes that he himself is the reality which he was trying to inquire. So this is that means savijñeyaka. So one can realize the supreme truth as one's own inner self. It cannot be explained, it can only be experienced. So with this we will conclude today's class. And the 5 minutes we can spend, if you have got anything to ask, you can ask, otherwise we'll conclude. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Pranamastu.